shooting drills.
A coach who knows the game can teach their team how to improve. But one who genuinely cares about each player,
you have what it takes. We got this.
Can inspire them to win. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.
Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Roma Press Podcast. I hope that you are doing well. So we have another packed episode for you. First, a brief interview with Jonathan Grade, who is the former editor of the renowned Football Italia. So had a fun, interesting chat with him. He just came out with a new book, Golazzo, the Football Italia Years. There is a link for that in the episode description that will take you to Amazon and you can purchase the electronic or paperback version of it. I read it. Very good book. Very interesting, especially if you enjoy taking a step back and reminiscing on some of the older days of calcio. And then Andy and myself, we talk about Dzeko, Fonseca, the upcoming match against Juve, a ton of stuff. So without any further ado, let me bring Jonathan on right now. All right, now very excited to welcome onto the podcast Jonathan Grade. Jonathan is the former editor of the world-renowned television program Football Italia, which aired on Channel 4 in the UK through the mid-90s up until the early 2000s. Jonathan and James Richardson, who I'm sure many of you know, they were the main faces of this program, which even if you lived outside of the UK, has become renowned and revered in the world of calcio. So Jonathan recently published a book titled Golazzo, the Football Italia Years. There's a link to Amazon in the episode description where you can purchase the paperback or the electronic version of the book. Very, very entertaining, especially if you enjoy reliving some of the Serie A seasons of past and you're one for nostalgia. So without further ado, Jonathan, thank you for coming on. Let me jump straight into it. So in your book, Golazzo, you sort of relive the days of past in the Serie A and how they sort of intertwined with your time on Football Italia with Channel 4. And in one of the chapters, you specifically discussed the 1999, 2000, and then the 2000 and 2001 seasons. And you juxtaposed these to what was going on in your life during that time and with the program. And this was a moment in which you guys were changing offices. You were moving from London to Leeds. And that sort of is a nice little metaphor, I guess we could say, for what was happening in the Serie A. In these two seasons that you discuss in the book, we saw Lazio and then we saw Roma win the Scudetto in successive seasons. So can you sort of go back in time and give us a little bit of what you remember during that period? Because anybody who follows the Serie A, and if you've done so for a longer period of time, generally we have been used to Juve, Milan, and Inter winning the Scudetto, but during these two seasons, certainly an anomaly. So can you sort of relive those two seasons for us?
Absolutely, John. Thanks so much for having me on. Yeah, it was a very, it was sort of a unique time on our production, because what we've been doing for years and years and years, for eight seasons, I think, suddenly was a massive change. The channel that transmitted our coverage, Channel 4, had a remit to produce 25% of their programs, I think it was, outside of London. And they decided to put that to us. They wanted us to make a regional production. The company Chrysalis Television had offices in the north of England, in Sheffield. So it was sort of, it worked logistically for the company. Obviously, it meant a big change for me personally, but we recruited staff up in the north and it went really well. But on the field back then, it was an incredible time, because the season before Lazio had finished runners-up in the league, and then the season where they won the league, no one expected them to. There was a massive storm in Perugia. Everyone thought Juve would win the league. They just needed to win there. And Perugia really didn't have much to play for, I don't think. And it was all going to plan for them, but there was a massive thunderstorm at halftime, and the second half was delayed. And in the end, Lazio won the league. And it was a very sort of symbolic time in Italian football, because all this years of domination from the northern trio of Milan, Inter and Juventus suddenly came to an end, and the Scudetto came to the capital. And for Roma, it was the nightmare scenario. Lazio winning only their second Scudetto in their centenary year. And I think Franco Sensi was the owner back then. And they realized they had to do something to... It was the nightmare scenario for the Giallorossi. And they went out and they signed a striker by the name of Gabriel Batistuta. And the image of him joining the club, he was basically joining a front line with Montella and Del Vecchio, and with obviously the legend that still is Francesco Totti. And the image of him signing, which I remember looking at the rushes of this, of a packed Curva Sud and him kicking balls deep into that traditional Roma end of the stadium. And we felt this was really the start of something special for Roma, and so it proved.
So building on that, it would be great to get an outsider's perspective of this, but why do you think it is that Roma, Lazio, Napoli, why do you think it is they struggle to win things when compared to the north sides, Juve, Milan, Inter?
It's a very interesting question. I think they've always had massive financial muscle behind them. You think of the Moratti years, the Berlusconi years, and the Agnellis. You know, there was a wash with cash. And back then, Serie A was the place to be. And it's coming back now. But back then, it's hard for fans nowadays who weren't watching football in the era to realise just how strong Serie A was. It was by a long chalk the greatest league in the world. Everyone wanted to play there. And, you know, you had the likes of Juve signing Zidane. You had Inter getting the famous Ronaldo, the first Ronaldo, the Brazilian one. And you had that Dutch trio at Milan. Then you've players like Shevchenko and Ware. And it was, they could blow teams out the market financially. And not only financially, but I think also I've heard it said on many occasions that winning a title in Rome is worth 10 in any other city, because you go to Turin or Milan and they win the Scudetto. Crazy scenes. But the next day, it's almost like it's business as usual. In Rome, when Roma won the Scudetto, it went on for weeks. And it was just the most incredible time for the Romanisti. It just didn't stop. You know, they had a huge celebration at the Circus Maximus. They had Sabrina Ferilli, who promised she'd go topless. All of these crazy things happened. And these guys were forever gods in the eyes of the Roma fans, because what they'd achieved, you know, it wasn't like just winning. There's no, obviously, the teams in Milan and Turin, they their fans expect success, but the pressure of leading the table for so long in that season, and potentially the thought of falling at the final hurdle was just unimaginable. I actually watched the Francesco Totti documentary, and he said on the day of that final match of the season at home to Parma, which Roma had to win to guarantee the title, Rome, the evening before and the morning, Rome was silent. Everyone knew the anticipation, but there was so much tension and nerves, because they knew this was their chance to break this, to obviously get one over Lazio after the previous season, and to really make a statement, not just for Rome, but for themselves, that, you know, this was their thoroughly deserved title and they were going to enjoy it. And they played phenomenal football that season. I mean, phenomenal. They were incredible to watch. They had obviously that incredible strike force, but all over the pitch they had winners, and it was just, and then they had that, the great Fabio Capello, who obviously, while the Roma players didn't necessarily have the experience of winning Scudetti, he had it in abundance, and his calming presence made sure that they didn't fall short.
Final question here, Jonathan, and once again, thank you for being so generous with your time. This has been great. So what is your opinion of the current relationship with players and the media? Because it seems like a lot of the things that you guys did with the skits, very open and honest interviews, it seems like that is so far and gone. And I can attest, even if they are willing to do an interview, you're not really getting anything interesting or new that you haven't heard before. You have players giving these very carefully worded and politically correct, I guess would be the correct phrasing, sort of responses, not really being too open and willing to share like they used to be. Is that a lot of the fault of social media? Does it have to do with clubs trying to mitigate the risk of players saying something silly in an interview? What is it in your mind that has gotten us to this place where it's a much different landscape than what we saw during the age of Football Italia?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think social media plays an absolutely huge part in football today. I mean, if I was to say that when we started, not only did we have no social media, we didn't have the internet. I mean, literally, we had the Gazzetta dello Sport delivered to the office every day. And any information I needed was either going to come from the newspaper or from an Italian member of our team who was across everything. We literally, on a match day, we wouldn't, you know, like you go on Twitter or whatever before you want to see the teams for a big match in Serie A now, you know, it's an hour before kickoff, each club's official account will tweet the lineups and the subs and whatever. We had to ring one of our colleagues in the stadium for each game, who would literally, sometimes even 20 minutes before the game started, would read out the team lineups. It would be, we had a link to the stadium and she would read out the team lineups for each side. And we'd have our commentator getting ever more edgy about when are we going to get these team lineups, like you know, who's playing and what, you know, who, you know, if X is playing, if Y is playing, will that affect their tactics and their formation and whatnot. But you know, I mean, now you get everything online, and I think a lot of this affects how players behave off the field. You know, they're not prepared to mock themselves and basically take a lighthearted look at things from their perspective of them doing whatever. You know, it's so important about image, it's not just about them. It's the clubs don't want to have these players tweeting or Instagramming something mocking about themselves or joking about themselves or another player, because it's a very serious business these days, and it's really all driven by social media. And that's what made it so different. I mean, nowadays, if you get an interview, if you film an interview with a player, the Twitter account would publish a 20-second clip of the interview, and you can enjoy it. Back then, there was none of that. We just put our show out to air with what at the top of the show, what's coming up in the show, and you know, we get a call every so often from Channel 4 from publicity saying, what can we put on for the program information for when people tune in. But you know, they wanted some info on each show, but there was we didn't have to put stuff on social media. There was no social media, so we couldn't put little clips up. People tuned into the show, and that was the first they get to look at Francesco Totti's interview. You know, there was no possibility of publishing anything beforehand, and I think that's what attracted a lot of people, because they would know that Gazzetta was coming on, and they regardless they tune in every week. And if they knew we had an exclusive with Francesco Totti or Roberto Baggio or Viali or whoever, they'd want to see it. And the access we had, obviously I've mentioned, was phenomenal. And I think people just, we were living in a different age then. It's very hard to compare. But it literally was, you know, there was none of the technology or the, you know, right. the social media and everything that we can often say. The fact that we're getting our information from the newspaper is just inconceivable these days.
And they won't risk anything at damaging that. So that's unfortunate, but that's the age we live in. I guess that's the price we pay with social media. So, Jonathan, once again, this has been fantastic. I so much appreciate your time and your generosity with your time. I thoroughly enjoyed this. Again, you can find a link in the episode description to his book, Golazzo, The Football Italia Years. I appreciate once again your time, and we will do this again. This has been fun.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on, and hope you enjoy the book, and good luck to Roma for the rest of the season.
Life is full of adventures.
Do you take this man to be your husband?
I do. Welcome home.
We did it.
He has your eyes.
He's perfect.
Make the most of them all with PenFed checking and savings accounts. Learn more at PenFed.org. Federally insured by NCUA. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed Credit Union. PenFed's got great rates for
everyone. So, Andy, transfer market over. Peace made between Dzeko Fonseca. I don't know where to start. It's a big match tomorrow, okay? A very big match. But with all of the crap going on, isn't it insane? It feels like only at Roma, even with the transfer window shut, the drama continues. Like, there's never a break. It's always something. So before we get into the Juve thing, let's just start with this Dzeko Fonseca thing. As we're recording this, did Fonseca begin speaking? Because as we were about to record, he was about to. Did he take? Okay, so he is at the podium. I haven't been following it.
Nothing spectacular.
Well, hold on. We have a Cristante Capitano appearance tomorrow.
Okay, that's spectacular. Okay.
Which, I phenomenal. It appears as if they've made peace. Okay, so he hasn't really dove into anything. He's still speaking at the moment. So he hasn't really elaborated as to what the situation is, other than Dzeko has been training well, and that's it. So I have a feeling he's not going to start. I would assume that Majoral starts. Maybe you disagree with that. It's just the sense I get. But whatever that may be, Dzeko starting, not starting. Regardless of that, I think in the end, this was the most optimal outcome, right? You would have to assume that things are relatively okay. Thiago Pinto, he went into it a little bit the other day. He sort of walked back this whole Alexis Sanchez thing. So in the end, though, ultimately, I think this was probably the best outcome that we could have hoped for, right? Or you disagree. You think him leaving could have been better for the team.
Well, it all depends on the mindset that Dzeko has right now and will have for the rest of the season. Really, it's up to him to show us whether the right decision was made by keeping him. And, you know, I think that him staying at Roma is just a sort of a description of how tough the situation was of getting rid of him, of really making deals in this transfer market.
Yes,
because there have been offers for him from even English sides, but he did not consider them. And then the only option in Italy that he was considering was Inter, and no solution was found. So, again, it also shows you that this is a transfer market that is completely in the hands of intermediaries and agents. Yeah. Because, I mean, if Thiago Pinto and Marotta both said that they basically knew very little about the deal, and when they met face to face, Ausilio and Pinto, they realized that there is no room to maneuver in. So,
no.
I think this is the good solution, but again, you know, this is. I think that what we learned from this, and what I think Dzeko learned from this, is that there are consequences to your actions. You know, Right. This is right. that this I think that a year or two ago we would have just let it slip by, you know, like so many times when players raised their voices and these voices were never met with a reaction from the management. This time it was a reaction. He was sent up to the stands. It reminded me a bit of when Bonucci had that whole thing at Juve.
Right.
And they basically said, you know what? We're going to sit you for the Champions League game, for the league game. You're going to sit in the stands and you're going to watch as your team continues to progress without you. And that's exactly what happened with Roma. They took a risk because those two games with Spezia and Verona, again, you know, easy opposition, whatever you want to call it, but those were mentally difficult games to win them after that kind of performances in the Serie A and in the Coppa Italia with Lazio and Spezia. That was very difficult. And to do it without the captain, without Dzeko, who's very vocal in the locker room, then that was a big showing. And I think that he should have been a lesson to him that if anything happens again, Roma have absolutely no problem putting him in the stands. And that's a lesson for everybody involved. Obviously, this is a guy who makes a lot of money. So every time you sit him, that's money down the drain.
Right.
At the same time, you just can't allow it. You just can't have it in a season that is this complex, this difficult, with matches packed into jam-packed in these upcoming months. You can't take a chance with somebody that is considered a leader being discontent and really just openly adversary to the coach and to the management.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially on the point that you made. You know, a previous Roma, more so pointing to the Roma of Palotta, given what they're paying this guy, and even other guys, Andy, we've been talking about it pretty heavily in the patron-only WhatsApp group, but if you look at the amount of money that Roma are paying guys not to play, just to sit there. We don't want you involved, and we are completely comfortable eating the cost of you to sit. It's a loss for us, but you know what? To have you not a part of things, we're okay with it. Fazio, Juan Jesus, Santon, we're going to add Pastore in there. It's both depressing yet somewhat impressive all at the same time. I don't really know what to make of that. I think it does say a little bit about some previous management decisions, particularly in the case of Juan Jesus and Pastore. But I completely agree. I think they sent a very clear signal to everybody that whether you're 35, 25, whether you're an undisputed first choice or not, this is a team. We have rules. And if they're not going to be respected, you will not take part. And in the end, I guess the only hope from this is that Roma are better for it. And it is interesting, too, when you consider, you know, Dzeko's been at the club, what now? Almost 6 years? Five and a half? Yeah, 5 and a half at this point. How many seasons has he not been rumored with moving away?
One, I guess,
and he
probably.
Ends up, and he ends up remaining.
His second year was the only one where everything went sort of smoothly.
Right after he wins the Capocannieri, and it is interesting that this guy who has forged such an important chapter in the history of Roma, they basically tried to get rid of him on what did you just say? Four occasions. Right, yeah. Four occasions. What do you make of that? Because I hadn't really considered it until the end of the, you know, until the gong finally rang and we knew for sure that he was remaining. But if you think about it, like if you just take his goal scoring output, you would say to yourself, oh, why would I consider getting rid of this guy? No. If anything, what do I have to do to keep this guy? And it is such a curious thing when you think about it that except for one season, which was his best one statistically, which was arguably two of the best Roma that we've had in quite some time.
Right.
I mean, they have tried multiple occasions to get rid of him.
Yeah, since the summer of 2016, after his first year where, you know, he was tempted after that terrible year, he was tempted to leave, then decided to stay because Spalletti convinced him. Okay, that's first one. Then in the winter of 2017/2018, then the summer afterwards, and then this summer recently, and now again in this winter market. So it was, I count it's five incredible. Times in total, including this one. So that's crazy for a player who's third in all time scoring, who's, you know, has been probably one of the most sort of positive things about this recent Roma. That's just unbelievable.
It really is. And I don't want to make this a like a memorial, but I think all things point to him and the club divorcing in the summer. Now, I think there is a caveat that I think we need to mention that is different about this past transfer market in January. He appointed a new agent, okay? And this came literally within 24 to 48 hours of him having those problems with Fonseca. He went out of his way, Andy. He sacked his longtime agent. I mean, well over a decade.
Right.
For who? He appointed Alessandro Lucci.
Right. Agent of Florenzi, who's the agent of Kolarov. Kolarov got into a spat with Fonseca, also following Sevilla, and he was gone on the next flight.
Exactly. So that's where I was going with this. I think this is probably the first time where you have had Dzeko himself more so being the proactive one pushing to leave. Listen, you do not go out there and appoint Lucci as your new agent, even if you don't, if you're not that familiar with the more high-profile Italian agents. It just takes one Google search to know who this guy is. I mean, he's not a Mino Raiola, of course, but he's pretty well known. Okay, and for him to go out there and again proactively do that, I think made this time, at least from my perspective, maybe you feel differently, but from my point of view, that's what made this time much different than the rest. And it felt like, I think this was the first window where it did feel like both sides just need to move on from each other. That, it has gotten to this point, it's just not working anymore, and Dzeko goes out and gets a new agent. So he doesn't get the move. I thought it was always going to be tough because 7.5 million euros. And by the way, I do have to take a brief victory lap because I did write an article like a month or two after he made that renewal. And I wrote that his wages are significantly higher than the 4.5 that have been published or that were being published at the time. And I said they're around 7, 7.5. And I got called an idiot and blah, blah, blah. But I do have to take a victory lap here. So, I mean, Andy, when you compare his wages to some of the other earners at other clubs, I mean, it's a significant amount, even when everybody seemed to, within this last month, figure out what this tax break was in Italy that has been around for a little over a year now, but everybody seemed to discover it this month. He does earn a pretty, pretty significant amount of money. And I just thought from the onset that it was going to be difficult. You're not going to find anybody who's going to pay him that. You would have to give him a longer contract with slightly lower wages, but still relatively high. Is the fact that he went out and sort of pushed for this, do you think that changes the dynamic of him remaining? Because now it does seem like, even though peace has been made, this is probably the first time I have felt like where you now have a disgruntled Dzeko. Not like the other times when he had Monchi trying to bend him off to Chelsea for Giroud or something, right? This feels like the first time where he himself wanted to go.
Yeah, I think that in the past you had Roma really pushing for a sale because of Plusvalenza. You know, remember that the plan was in the winter of 2017/2018 to offload Dzeko and Emerson to Chelsea to then be able to have a productive summer. Emerson went through, Dzeko did not, but that was Monchi pushing for it, and then complications and whatever prevented that move, and then again it was for plusvalenza reasons a year later. So but now it's pretty clear that, looking back on it, that Sevilla game was sort of the end for Dzeko at Roma, Kolarov at Roma, Fazio at Roma, Juan Jesus Roma, the their time at Roma is up. As we're talking, Fazio again not called up, Juan Jesus not called up.
Impressive. Oh my gosh.
It's that. I mean, we've come to a point where some players are being held accountable. And to me, yes, it's painful because you're taking a big risk, I mean, Borja Mayoral is a tough worker. He put a lot of effort into earning his playing time, and more power to him. Obviously, he doesn't have the status of Dzeko, and that may be a good thing for Roma. At the same time, you have whole defenses that are terrorized by Dzeko, but don't know what to expect with a guy like Borja Mayoral. And at the same time, you miss that. You miss that presence, that guy who's been there for the past almost 6 years, who's been leading the attack. But I think that this is also sort of a much needed strong showing of determination on Roma's part, that you just can't mess around, which has been, the theme for Roma. And this is, again, I don't want to, say something blasphemous, but the status of a player at Roma since the days of, Totti and Cassano, Montella, De Rossi. I mean, these were players that were above everything and anything, right? And Cassano was offloaded to Real Madrid because everybody hated him. everybody. So, right. But there has always been this sort of storyline of players being above the management, of players making the decision of when to stay, when to leave, and then we see that a lot of times that backfired for Roma as a whole. You kept the player a bit too long, and then you had trouble financially and performance-wise. So that, to me, like, for example, Perotti should have left over a year ago. Perotti shouldn't have left just this summer. But those are decisions made by players who think they have all the power in the world. And with Dzeko, it was finally... it was finally a moment of, listen, you're big, but you're not that big. We can play without you. And that's what happened.
For sure. So then you think this summer, this is it, right? The divorce is arriving.
Yeah, he is gonna look for a solution. He's gonna send Lucci out and say, get me the best deal possible. And I think everybody is going to be happy. It is a problem. Those wages, I mean, for a player that has entered your history books and so on, that's fair. But you look at some of the numbers recently, you look at the attitude, and those 7.5 million really start to weigh on your shoulders. And for a player that is aging, that is nearing the sort of the final years of his playing time, that's a lot, especially for a club like Roma. It's and there is that argument, Roma is the third highest team in terms of wages, so you have to expect more of them. Wages don't equal quality. That's as simple as that.
No.
If you have Juan Jesus making almost 3 million a year with a 5-year contract, that does not mean that you're a Scudetto contender. I'm sorry.
No, it absolutely does not. Again, if you look at Roma's wage bill, especially over the last few years, it's not as if, I mean, we can find a number of the highest earners at the club who have been among the worst performers. So I don't I don't buy into that mindset that wages equal automatic success. It's just that's silly. What do you expect now from him? Because regardless of whether you were on the he should go, he should stay, he's here. He's not going anywhere until the end of the season at the earliest. So in my opinion, I think it would be silly not to make the most of his presence. Now, whether or not that actually happens remains to be seen, but I don't know what can you realistically hope for now from Dzeko, because it just seems like we're just waiting on this thing to end for the end of the season to come and the divorce to happen. How much can you really count on him is really my biggest question mark and concern, because whether or not you like him or not, and we know that he's an extremely divisive player, has been for a number of years, but I think you have to utilize him. There's no doubting. Listen, he wastes a number of chances, but we're going to be discussing Juve in a moment here. And if I have to go back and look at that goal that he missed earlier this season, I'm going to end up in the fetal position. But I think he still has a pretty important role to play, or at least should have an important role to play.
Right.
How do you feel about that? Moving forward, how do you utilize him, or how would you utilize him? Because I don't know what the right answer is. I think that based on what we've seen lately, I think we could, I don't really think it's that controversial by saying I think we all like what we've seen from Mahut Ali and we'd like to see more of him. He's done really,
no,
really
no,
well.
No. Yeah.
So I guess how does Dzeko fit into the picture for the rest of the season? Because I do think it is a big unknown. Just by way of, you have Mahut Ali playing well. You have his issues with the team. What do you do now? That's my concern. What now? Because I don't know if there is a right answer.
No, I wish I had an answer. And unfortunately, again, I hate to repeat myself, but it all depends on Dzeko and the attitude, because we saw that Fonseca can handle the pressure. You know, he can handle at least that, the pressure of making decisions his way. You know, so far he hasn't given in to whatever demands are made by players or fans. He's given playing time to those players that he thinks deserve playing time, and I don't think he's going to do anything remotely different than with Dzeko. He's going to see what Dzeko's attitude is. We'll probably play as a substitute in the Juve game. And it's about understanding what the mentality of the player is at this moment, and also remembering, and because this is the most important thing, that it's, at the end of the day, what matters most is the good of the team. So if the team is performing and you have a Dzeko who's demoralized and doesn't really want to be out there, then you just can't play him. You can't. You have to take that gamble. You have to take that risk. You have to waste that money. But it's as simple as that, because too often we've seen players that had no business being on the pitch, and then Roma... that is also something that contributed partly to what happened with sort of the way we fell from the stars of going regularly to the Champions League to, making Europa League. So again, it's a difficult matter, and it's a matter that was really not necessary for this season. So I think that really changes your mind. And I know a lot of people that were contrary to that, but it changes your mind. But what we were hearing this summer about Milik possibly coming. I mean, Milik went to the clinic.
That poor guy. Woof.
Yeah, he went to the clinic for the Friedkins to check his knees. I mean, that was embarrassing. Imagine, can we check your knees, please, before you sign your contract? And that didn't happen. Which,
and now
again,
his new club, he arrives, and there's like an insurrection within
8 hours
of him stepping foot in France. Oh, and his
coach resigns. Yes.
His agent hasn't commented on it, but I asked because we saw those rumors. Did you see? Apparently, they put a 12 million
clause. Yes.
Buyout.
Yes.
So you have a buyout, and then Napoli, on top of what they paid, they have a percentage that goes to them when he's sold. What? How is that even possible?
Yeah.
So Yikes. But I completely agree with you. It's just such a weird situation because, listen, if we were just to take things by putting aside the drama of the past few weeks, if you just said, listen, Jekyll is going to leave in the summer, what do you think? Do you utilize him as much as you can? Press the pedal all the way to the floor, see what you can get. I think everybody would say yes, but when you factor in, again, Majoral, when you do factor in everything that has happened this month, it's such a weird position to be in. And I have to tell you, I haven't really heard this angle of the situation discussed, but you have to feel terrible for Fonseca, right? Because this is a guy who, do we remember when we all thought Jacob was going to Inter before Fonseca arrived? Fonseca manages to sway him along with Petrarca. He ends up remaining. He signs this new contract with huge wages. And Fonseca, the entire time, he is praising Dzeko. Do you remember that? When he first arrived, he's saying, oh, I can't wait for him to be here. He's a great player, one of the best strikers in all of world football. And fast forward less than 2 years later, and we're in this situation where it's not even their first, you know, Andy, it's not as if, you mentioned Sevilla, it's not as if what happened a couple of weeks ago was their first falling out. This is like the second yep. or the third fight that they have had yep. in that short span. And, you know, I have criticized Fonseca on here for a number of things. But you have to feel really sorry for him, or at least sympathize with him slightly in this regard, because there is no way that if you had told us before the season, hey, listen, the manager and arguably the second, third, fourth most important player within the team, they're going to have a huge falling out and he's probably going to leave in less than 1 year. I mean, if you would have told us that before the season began, I would have predicted that Roma finish in 8th, 9th, 10th position, and it's the usual chaos that we're so used to here. I genuinely feel bad for Fonseca in this regard because, A, there's no way you could have foreseen it coming, but B, I mean, he couldn't get a replacement. There was nobody else. They had chances.
Yep.
For one reason or another, they didn't go through. And now he is left with an aging striker who he's on the outs with, and Borja Majoral, who, again, has done extremely well and deserves every bit of praise that he has gotten. But if we're simply going by his track record, you would be insane to say at this very moment, you and me, if we were on here saying, start him the rest of the season and we have zero worries that Roma will drop a level or anything, right? I mean, it just feels like this is a no-win situation.
Yeah, this is it's tough, and it shows you some, you know. I think that the main conclusion is that, again, Fonseca is no pushover. Di Francesco was a pushover.
Because I was just about to say that, as you said. I mean, gosh.
And glaring
difference. A renewal after his what? What was that? That was their seventh loss in a row?
Winless Cagliari. After 8 matches, yeah.
Cagliari, they hand him a contract renewal.
Yeah.
I mean, how does he handle it? Because it's sort of like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. I think regardless of how good he is doing, we would be a bit naive to just thrust all of the hope on Majoral, right?
Yeah, no, obviously it's, you know, I mean, it says a lot that this is his best season so far.
Like, exactly, right.
Like he's already equaled his record, scoring record in the season. So, and it's halfway through the season. So we can imagine that will probably increase, hopefully. At the same time, it's a lot of people were happy with Dzeko staying this summer, but I felt it that there was something wrong. There was something wrong because there is time for everything, and some players need to leave. Just like it or not, Nainggolan had to leave. That was it. That was that's his playing time. His serious playing days were over.
Finished.
If there is one thing that Monchi did right was that. Of getting rid of Nainggolan then, of getting rid of Strootman, whether you like it or not. It was the right decision, maybe not at the right time, meaning not into the season. That shouldn't have been happened when the season started, but before. But those were the right moves, and that's very difficult to pull off, to get rid of an important player at the right time. And, you know, I mean, you could write pages about that with Totti or the likes of De Rossi, which, again, we're getting into blasphemous territory.
I don't want to go there.
No, I don't want to either. But it's that. It's tricky. It's very, very tricky. It's very sensitive subject matter. And with Dzeko, this summer, it felt different. It didn't feel like, oh, wow. Now I feel better, you know. I feel safer with him up top. You sense that there was tension between the two parties, and neither player and neither the coach came out of it fully satisfied, which again is a big blow for Roma.
Shooting drills.
A coach who knows the game can teach their team how to improve, but one who genuinely cares about each player,
you have what it takes. We got this.
Can inspire them to win. At Truist, we believe the same is true for banking. Because when you work with someone who knows a lot and cares even more, you're unstoppable. Truist, leaders in banking, unwavering in care. Start feeling unstoppable. Visit truist.com/care. Truist Bank, member FDIC, leading based on top 10 U.S. commercial bank.
For sure, and I guess that sort of flows into Juve. So Roma, they go to Torino tomorrow. Very, very difficult match. Extremely difficult. Again, Roma have not covered themselves in glory in these big matches. We already know that. So when you add this Dzeko thing into it, I don't want to compare it to Schick. We all remember what happened with him against Juve. I don't want to say that by starting Majoral, you're risking a situation like that of Schick, because I think it's completely different. You have a Majoral who has already outscored a Schick, who is a Roma, for two seasons. And Majoral already has more goals than he did in his entire Roma tenure. So I don't want to say that starting him against Juve is akin to sort of like, you brought it up a couple of times, how Spalletti started Gerson at Juve.
Nah,
that one moment.
Nah, that was his first game.
Right, exactly. I don't think it's akin to that. But I do think it is obviously a very pressure-packed match, a very particular match from the rest. What are you expecting for tomorrow? Because I have to tell you, I'm not even remotely confident, and that's not even mentioning Pellegrini not being able to take part, Smalling not being able to take part, Dzeko, who knows. I am not even remotely confident. Is that where you are?
Obviously. I mean, if you are here and really waiting for me to say something optimistic, which I've really tried in recent weeks, this is not the day. No, I expect us to lose. I'm sorry. I expect us to lose. That's it. Because when was the last time we won there? Was it 2014? Was it 7 years ago? I mean,
I believe it was.
Yeah. Okay. 7 years ago. That's not changing.
The Garcia. Yeah. We all know that one.
Yes. And it's not changing. It's not about to change tomorrow because Cristante starts. I'm sorry to break everyone's hopes. So please don't get your hopes up. It's a matter of, I mean, we're going up a team that, you know, should really be doing much, much better than they've been doing. And they've really been picking it up recently. So we're in a difficult situation. I just want to say that I can accept a loss because, I mean, I've basically become numb to losses in the Juventus Stadium. That's, you know, it's something that we, oh, okay. Higuain scored. Okay.
Jesus.
You know, oh, Cuadrado. Okay. Forget about it. You know, it's something that I remember I was in Heathrow. All the flights were down and I had to sit in my hotel room and watch Higuain score on us. So, I've grown accustomed to it, but there is a very important but, especially with this season in mind. I want some attitude. These games are impossible. Yes. You go there and it players are usually scared. And doesn't matter what coach you have. You had the Spalletti team that did exactly that. They basically went out there and got embarrassed and lost. So it's a matter of having a little bit of attitude. I'm mildly excited to see what the two up front with Mkhitaryan and Mayoral may look like. You know, how will they complement each other, especially against the likes of Bonucci, Chiellini, or whether it's De Ligt. That's going to be interesting. You know, I can't say I expect positive outcomes. I just want to see a team that shows a bit of heart, because at the end of the day, and these losses this season with these big teams, it's not really the result that is discouraging. It's the attitude.
Oh, for sure. Without question.
And we all know that, again, it's been 7 years of losses at the Juventus Stadium. 7 years. So it's not that we suddenly expect this team to go out there and dictate the tempo for Juve and smash them, you know. No, we just want to see a team that doesn't give up after the initial 5 minutes.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a shame to lose to Atalanta. It's not a shame to lose to Napoli. I think you just hit the nail on the head. It's not only the attitude. It's, man, they look scared, and they lack so much confidence. It's so astounding how much different they look. And it's not even, forget the tactical stuff, okay? We can break down the tactical stuff all day as to what changes between the big matches and the smaller ones. It's just the level of confidence that they display. It is the body language, man. Ugh. That Napoli match will always stay with me, as will the Atalanta one. It just looks like their heads drop. And you can, it's weird because you can see it, you can feel it when it's over. Like, you just know that this team is done.
Yeah. And that's probably the most frustrating when you come up against these teams, because, mind you, this Juve team is touchable. This is a team that should be doing far better than they have been in this past season. But
yeah, and Roma, let's not forget, Roma should have pumped them by four goals, okay, in the first minute. Yep. Maybe by five.
Yep.
For them.
Almost all in the first half, yes.
Exactly. And again, it was an attitude thing. You go up a man, and their heads just, they drop. They lacked the killer instinct.
And the worst thing about it is that it happens to the team's best players.
We
are here asking about a renewal for Mkhitaryan, but so far Mkhitaryan is also one of the main guys not showing up in these big matches. He scores, or he tries to score like he did against Juve, and then he sort of disappears off the face of the earth, and that cannot happen. I want to see effort. I'm sure Fonseca does too. He talks about ambition a lot when he goes into these matches, but that ambition hasn't shown up yet. And I really want to see something tomorrow, because, man, if I have to see Pirlo being hailed as the next,
give me a break,
whatever, Sacchi or Capello, then I will probably do something very, very serious on here and drastic. But it's just, this team forgets how to play in these games, and I can't accept a loss. You know, I can't accept a 3-0, because sometimes the other team is just better. And tomorrow you're going out there with the midfield that is going to be Vertu, VR, Cristante, and you're going to have Borja Mayoral with Mkhitaryan up top, and that's really all you have there as your point of reference going forward. So I can accept this team not being able to sustain 90 minutes of just pure quality, but I have to see some heart.
Yeah, again, the biggest thing is not, it has nothing to do with the actual results against these big sides. It's just how different they look. And it, there is something to it, because, and if you just look at their record this season, against the small teams, I believe they are 12-1-0 against teams outside the top six. I saw
with the Verona match.
Right,
as a loss. Yes, sorry.
Correct. So there is something there, okay? When we started discussing it, you know, maybe at first it could have appeared as a you know, an anomaly. There's particular circumstances that happened in certain matches that, you know, had an effect on the overall outcome. But I think we just have too much evidence now that there is something to it. And I don't know how they overcome it. I don't know what the solution is other than winning and showing more attitude. That's something for Fonseca to figure out as to what the problems have been. But you just said that you predict a loss. You expect a loss. From an overall just objective standpoint, I said it after the Derby match against Lazio, but I know you're saying that you're not confident going into this one, and neither am I, so I don't mean to single you out there, but at some point they're going to have to win these. It just at yeah. some point, you know, right now it's your objective is to win to qualify in the Champions League. We would hope at some point that shifts to winning the Scudetto. At some point this has to click. You know, this isn't we're okay with a loss, but if we see a good attitude and personality from the players, you know, we can live with we can be okay with a loss. Like, at some point that's going to have to stop. And again, to expect that this season is unfair, that's not within the realm of possibility in my opinion, but when does that happen? How do you make it happen? I'm so tired of coming into these matches and feeling utter hopelessness, complete and utter hopelessness.
Right.
At some point that has to end.
It has to end. I think in typical Roma fashion, it will probably end with like a miracle. It seems like any time, you know, Roma are so good at having negative records. You know, we have these traditions of the Purgino, of the last minute goal by a former player. You know, I mean, we are almost
renowned
gifting.
For it. Renowned
yeah,
for
we're it. We are give. I mean, we have resurrected the likes of Daniele Verde. Okay, Daniele Verde. I don't know if people are aware of who Daniele Verde is, but we allowed him to score twice on us, and you know, now he's getting more playing time at Spezia, so thanks to us. So, and in typical Roma fashion, these negative records are usually broken up by, you know, a once in a lifetime miracle that then just then it has to happen. I just don't think that tomorrow will be the day.
okay. Well, that was
I will hope for it, but I just don't think that the circumstances are right. And even more so now, it should be the perfect time. I mean, this stadium is going to be empty, you know.
Exactly.
For the first time, you're not going to have that, you know, crowd of assholes chanting, having that horrible chant.
Oh, that song.
Yeah, terrible. The worst, absolutely.
It really is. Cringe.
And you, it's right there. I mean, they're not untouchable, you know. And even their best players in recent months have had spells of really nothing. I mean, Ronaldo, aside from a few penalties here and there, has shown absolutely nothing in recent weeks. And even Morata, who was their best player at the beginning of the season, has had some trouble. But it's, can I, if I look at the record, if I look at the history, can I be hopeful? Can you be hopeful?
No. No.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess, but at some point we have to get at the station where we go from feeling complete and utter hopelessness to we at least feel like we have a chance. In fact, I don't really even think that that's too big of an ask for Roma.
But I do think that there is a chance for a good performance. I think that this team has the good performance in them. they I mean, you look at some of the way they played in these matches and against Spezia and Verona. They have a system. There is a clip going around of them against Verona getting out of a tight area, which is exactly the same way they played against Cagliari and against Bologna, and the last minute goal against Spezia again was that of a scheme of something that you clearly see that they have in them, that they know that they can play that way. It's just that in these big matches, that is nowhere to be found, and you have to ask yourself: is this the same team that scored 5 goals against Bologna within the first 45-50 minutes? I mean, it's absolutely nuts.
So then, nothing tomorrow. Loss for you.
Yep.
Is it that? I guess ultimately. Again, losing to Juve, it's not that big of a deal. But then, I guess after said loss, we then have the same conversation of,
yes,
this is a chance for Roma to bounce back.
This is the time.
I have to show something, blah, 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 blah. I hate to go there already, but I guess if we are counting on this loss for essentially many of the big matches, I haven't really seen anybody express too much belief that Roma can do anything. I mean, they play Inter away too. So again, at some point, these matches have to be won. And I guess I keep going back to it, but at what point do our expectations change? At what point can we start hoping more? And I have to tell you, again, it's not necessarily the loss, it's the attitude that has bothered me most about Roma in these matches, but I know Fonseca has come under fire recently. We have to see something from him, right? I don't think it is unfair to ask him to
alter his approach. Are we going there again? Yeah.
No, well, listen, he gets asked this question before and after every single big match, so I'm not going to add to the discussion, because he hasn't really divulged anything. He hasn't said, oh well, you know, I think if I do this, maybe we win. I don't know what he changes, but the substitution thing, I feel like that's too easy of an answer, or I guess too easy to point at. But I think he has to show something too, and I know you're probably going to disagree with me on that, but I just feel as if this is, again, the type of match where the really, really good managers, they help elevate their team when all seems lost. They change things tactically. They do surprises with the formation, with the lineup, whatever you think embodies what, you know, a manager raising the level of his team and pulling something out because of a decision he did. We can debate what that is, but I just feel like he has to show something here. But I know you'll probably disagree with that, because it just seems like over these last 2 weeks, putting the Spezia thing aside, it seems like not too many people have concerns about him. And I found it interesting, because I've been listening to other podcasts just to hear a different perspective. And I've heard a number of hosts and journalists and pundits, all of them pretty much saying Roma would be insane to be even questioning Fonseca at this point. Now, again, when I think you're in it every single day, I think you have obviously a much different perspective. So that notwithstanding, though, the whole does he stay, does he go, Fonseca in this moment, what do you think? Because I know even after the Spezia thing, you didn't waver in your support for him. You thought, no, this is silly that we're even questioning him.
Yep. And I still think that. And I'm here to say that tomorrow our offensive substitutions will be Bruno Perez, Carles Perez, Santon. Okay? That's
Santon,
your goal.
He lives. Yep. From the grave.
Exactly. Santon, he lives. I think that says a lot. And again, I'm not defending these games, because I also think that we should have done. I mean, the Atalanta game, you score first, you should play differently. Napoli game, the scoreline doesn't really tell the story of a Napoli that was excellent. It's just that that Napoli did something and we did nothing. So there, I agree with you. But then there are all these circumstances. He's playing with Borja Mayoral and Mkhitaryan as his two strikers. His top striker and probably the highest paid player in the team is on the bench and has been on the stands for the past 2 weeks. Pedro is experienced player. Hurt.
What happened? I didn't even bring him up. Do we have Pastore syndrome with him? Because I have to tell you, I am slowly starting to worry a bit, if I have to be honest with you.
I'm not going there yet, but yeah, without a doubt, it's this is worrying. He's not going to have Pellegrini, who has been his best player in the last month or so. He's not going to have him up there. So these are all circumstances that make it much, much, much more difficult to manage a club like Roma, to sustain the pressure, to play these big matches the way you want to play them. The manager will have to change. The manager will have to do something, but it takes everybody, you know. It takes everybody to be on the same boat. And so far this season, not everybody has been contributing the same.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't you say something about Pedro coming here for a Roman vacation or a Roman holiday? Do we remember how good he was in that first month? I mean, he was really strong. That goal against Udinese,
Europa League.
Exactly. He was good.
I'm still keeping the faith. I still think that this he can, you know, slowly but surely. I think Fonseca said it doesn't seem like something that he will have to deal with for a longer period of time. So I expect him to be there in the Europa League. I expect him to start figuring it out, because the way he played, it didn't look like the same player we saw in the opening to the season. So I think it's just a matter of getting back into the groove. And Roma desperately need all the pieces. So whatever El Shaarawy can offer us, get him in. Whatever Pedro can offer us, get him in. And if Carles Perez can figure out what a football looks like, then that much better.
El Shaarawy, where does he fit in? You just rattle off who the substitutes would be. Again, it's not exactly a controversial Stephen A. Smith level take to say that Roma have essentially no depth, especially when you look in the attack. Are we looking at a guy who has a big role here?
Should have. Definitely should have. This team is for the taking. And I think that's why also it's a positive thing to see Borja Mayoral playing the way he's playing, because I think that there are very few roles in this team that are, you know, closed for business. So you can't deny that a guy like Spinazzola is untouchable. You can't take him off. The same way with Rick Karsdorp. You can't take him off right now. But up until a few months ago, you never thought you could have these players performing the way they are right now. So if in all this negativity, we have to find something positive, is that some players are really surprising. And hopefully a guy with El Shaarawy's quality, with his familiarity with the league, with Roma, he can fit in fairly quickly, because Roma definitely need that.
Give me the score tomorrow. How bad are we weeping? It's not embarrassing level, right? We're not looking at a 4-0 like.
No, I think 2-0. I think 2-0.
So
is that
no
fair?
Hope.
Is that okay?
I thought 2-1. I thought 2-1.
Oh, you think
so?
We score.
You have zero hope.
No, John, not even, because then it's gonna come back and bite me in the ass, and I can't. I can't allow it anymore. I'm tired. I want to have a pleasant Saturday, being like staring at my TV and being like, okay, yeah, I can live with that. Okay, I can take that, and not being, oh my God, what did I just say on the podcast?
Okay, well, all right, everyone. We'll talk to you after Saturday, I guess. Hopefully,
right. Shomer Shabbat, as John Goodman would say in Big Lebowski. Shomer Shabbat.
Okay, well, maybe they could surprise us. That would be a welcome gift. We will be back after the weekend following the match against Juve. As always, thank you so much for listening. Have a great weekend, and we will chat in a few days. Until then, ciao.
Ciao.